Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks, on this Aloha Friday, August 22nd. Today, we honoho our interviews where we hone in on the rule of law. It's a stone we've been turning over and over in these polarizing times. We hear about challenges to the Constitution and about the rule of law from former UH Law School Dean Avi Soifer. We talk to a state senator about a series of forums he's launching that will focus on the rule of law. A former governor, a state senator, and former attorney general, and a prominent businessman hope to spur more conversations about what is happening in our country. Unprecedented times that call for action. Tune to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Earlier this spring, State Attorney General Ann Lopez was the featured speaker at the University of Hawaii William S. Richardson Law School, marking the first 100 days under the Trump administration and the more than 200 legal challenges filed against his actions. Hawaii has joined in on a number of them. The benchmark came as the New York Times published two opinion pieces that caught my eye. One surveyed 35 legal scholars about what has been characterized as presidential overreach. Has Trump gone too far? A second article wrote of a rare event in the nation's highest court recently. It was a standing ovation by the Supreme Court justices for a government lawyer who had given his final argument, his 160th. His name is Edwin Kneedler, and he was praised for his candor, integrity, and loyalty to the rule of law. We replay our conversation with former UH Law School Dean Avi Soifer, who visited our studios to talk about the rule of law during tumultuous times, starting with the story of Edwin Kneedler.
It was recognition, a very unusual recognition by the court of a particular individual, but it was someone, a deputy solicitor general, meaning he argues for the United States, who did his job consistently, no matter who the president was, no matter who was in Congress. And as they said in his praise, and this is the Supreme Court joining in the standing ovation, they said he didn't care so much whether he won or lost. He cared about the law and the development of the law. And that notion that you do your job is unfortunately kind of disappearing in these days. Because if you were doing your job in the government positions that a lot of the Trump people are in, there's no way they should be doing what someone, Kate Shaw, in an op-ed, I guess today or yesterday, called cartoonish orders. Because if you're doing your job and you're a lawyer, for sure you're supposed to be paying attention to the law. And a lot of this is so reckless and so lawless that they're not doing their job. And one of the things that I think stands out for what happened the last time that Trump believes he won was that people did their job, including the vice president. They did their job even though at personal consequence that was not so good for them. They knew it was important to follow the law. Now, that's not to always follow the law. There are unequal and really some very bad laws. But at least you have to take into account what the rules are.
Well, you know, and this attorney who got the standing ovation, and it did bring tears to my eye. I was just so proud that they would recognize him. And they said he was loyal to the rule of law. Mm-hmm. And you are an optimist. You're hopeful. Let's talk about this rule of law. And because some of these legal terms, you know, folks may not pay so much attention to, but certainly whether it's academic freedom, First Amendment rights, this is important.
Well, rule of law is important, but it doesn't mean that you mindlessly follow the law. And we certainly have unjust laws. One of the things to recognize about what the current president is saying is the golden age, which is the Gilded Age. That's what gave us Plessy versus Ferguson. That's what the Supreme Court was saying in the 1890s. The decade before, they eviscerated the Civil Rights Act that was meant to protect former slaves. We're still paying the dues for some of those moves that they made. And there's a case I once wrote a little thing about, which is called Abelman versus Booth, which is very apropos because it comes out of Wisconsin. And the people in Wisconsin did not want to return fugitive slaves. Wisconsin being the state where this judge has now been arrested, Wisconsin Supreme Court says, we're not going to do it. And you've got this fugitive slave you're trying to return. We're not going to go along. his name was Glover, and he escaped to Canada and was never heard from again, I guess. But the state Supreme Court said, we're going to issue a habeas corpus. We're not going to let you send him back. And the U.S. Supreme Court and its Chief Justice Taney, who brought us Dred Scott, this is just 2 years later, says, oh, no, federal power. You state court can't do that at all. Now, what was admirable in that story? Well, it wasn't necessarily following the rule of law once Chief Justice Taney said federal power says the Fugitive Slave Law has to be enforced, though a lot of people thought, I think correctly, it was unconstitutional for a number of reasons. So we have to recognize that there are moments when you shouldn't just blindly oblige because it is the law, and morality comes into the question, and morality ought to come into the question, in my view. I once was in a meeting, not at the law school, of course, where it was a little boring and I was trying to stay awake, and I took the letters of rule of law and rearrange them, and you get awful lore.
Okay.
So there are those who think, including a lot of people in the current administration, that it's just awful lore. Who cares? We're going to do what we want, and we're going to use retribution if we want to do it, and it just doesn't matter what the law says. That, I think, is wrong on the other side.
I was taken aback with the arrests of the judges the other day, and, you know, because everything's been shaken to its core. All these institutions that we've held up there in high esteem with respect, and there's no respect. So how are you looking at this time? You know, I know the New York Times ran an opinion piece, and it surveyed a number of legal scholars, you know, liberals, conservatives, and it was a very interesting kind of lay of the land.
I saw that piece, too, and I thought it was very well done and very important, because no matter where you were on the spectrum, no matter who you voted for in the case of judges who appointed you, people do have respect for the rule of law. That's important. That is a standard American move, which we've tried at times to spread across the world too aggressively. But there is stability in the rule of law. And chaos, as revolutionaries all too often find out, doesn't bring the utopia they were after. It brings suppression. It brings more oppression. And so you have to be very careful in saying, oh, we don't care about the law. And we are getting close. It is a set of constitutional crises right now. It's not just one. It's not just the First Amendment. It's not just the separation of powers. It's one thing after another. And it is shocking in the extreme. And I think that's what was reflected by the 35 scholars across the board, libertarian, conservative, moderate, liberal. They all basically were saying, this is shocking. We have never seen this. And certainly not from the top. Now, it was going back to the slavery moments for a minute or two. What Abraham Lincoln said on the campaign trail, as it were, is we are obliged to follow the Dred Scott decision. We can oppose it loudly and repeatedly, inside and outside, in legislation, in the streets. But you're bound by that decision. That's kind of interesting that he thought that the parties were bound by that decision. This is a presidency that doesn't feel bound by anything, apparently, and certainly not by the rule of law. And there may be, this is curbside psychology, I guess, but it is sometimes forgotten and not much talked about that Donald Trump had an older sister by a number of years, who was a distinguished federal court judge. So where does his passion to go after judges and dissenters come from? One could say there may be some family connection to what he's doing, because she was middle of the road, Republican, but people respected her. She was a district court and then court of appeals judge in the Third Circuit. She was from New Jersey.
So maybe that's where some of this comes from, family dynamic.
I haven't seen people write about it, but it certainly has occurred to me.
Interesting. Well, I think one thing that it has been pretty stunning is this whole assault on academic freedom. I know the university president has been, you know, very measured, and folks are trying to, you know, I've heard this line many times, you know, not put your head up out of the foxhole, and trying to be strategic about what they say and what they do, because there's so many lives on the line. So much of our research funding is tied into this. You know, you can respect that. And yet you do hear people, you know, no, we should be shouting from the rooftop. You know, this is not acceptable. We won't go along. We won't do this anticipatory obedience. Now, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's much too much of that anticipatory obedience, and I'm glad we're concerned about it. It's hard to judge, of course, anyone from outside and the various pressures that are on someone. And you're absolutely right. Our university depends a lot on federal funding, particularly in the sciences, but also in medicine. And there are issues about Hawaiians and Hawaiians who get benefits. We are a place of Hawaiian learning, so we're vulnerable if Hawaiians are regarded as a racial classification. I think you can and should distinguish between ancestry and race, which is a discussion for another day. But ancestry is not the same as race discrimination. And so it is an overruling of what the Supreme Court said in the affirmative action decision, what Chief Justice Roberts said, that says it has a lot to do with DEI. It has nothing to do with DEI. They didn't mention DEI. It has to do with race. And diversity, equity, and inclusion have come to be a shorthand among the critics. But nowhere does the Supreme Court address the questions of diversity. Equity is a central pillar of the common law parallel, going back to English roots. Natural equity is actually what the constitutional framers, whoever they were, talked about more than they did about a written constitution. They believed in natural equity. And some evidence that is against those who would be textualists is the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment says all these rights we just listed are not all the rights. There are others not in this text. That's what the Ninth Amendment says. It is so scary to go there because we want certainty of text that the Ninth Amendment has never been the basis of a majority opinion in the Supreme Court.
Well, no, I want to go read the Ninth Amendment.
It's been used, but it's never and used as a kind of rule of construction, but no one has ever relied on the Ninth Amendment because there it is saying it's not just the text. Well, that was largely, and there's some wonderful recent scholarship by Mary Bilder, for example, that says they weren't about written. They were about equity. They were about natural equity, which she says, I think quite convincingly, is about the people. It's about democracy. It's about a connection that they saw in England and in the colonial period, not with a written constitution, which was fairly new, of course, but rather with this understood connection. Common law is not written down. The rights that they had a revolution about were not written down. Taxation without representation, you don't find that in a legal document, but that's a central argument to what they believed.
Anything you want to underscore about just the issue of academic freedom as we watch these different lawsuits play out?
Well, I think it's very important to see that there can be a collaboration, a kind of not synchronous, but a collaboration between the insiders and the outsiders. And they have to understand that each is valuable for the other. So I think that there are certain things that university presidents or deans can and can't say that other people can say. And that collaboration, that symbiotic relationship has been important in our history, going back to the revolution or the anti-slavery movement. It was useful to know that there was a crowd outside. They could say things that the lawyer couldn't say. And the lawyer was actually in a kind of bully pulpit in court. So sometimes that's just useful to make a point. You're going to lose your case anyway. But it's really important to have a good defense to try not to lose your case. And there's always been organizing among labor unions and others around what goes on in court, as well as not, I shouldn't say always, but as well as outside of court in the American tradition. So I think it's really important to have a multi-pronged approach and to realize the importance of collaboration. And it's all too easy to criticize the other people because they're not radical enough or whatever you want to say. But actually, that collaborative coalition building is crucial, as I think it was in the anti-war movement. And one of the things I think lost by technology is if you're just talking to people you agree with online, you don't go to the demonstration or the parade and see the grandmothers against the war, which was reinforcing for what you believed as well. There's a little known story that I think is really important. So the Kennedy brothers were having a lot of trouble with Martin Luther King and with nonviolence and protests and so on. And then came planning for the March on Washington. And they did the mic test a day or two before, and it wasn't working, or it wasn't working well. Nobody was going to hear Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And Bobby Kennedy called some Air Force people and fixed it. Now, he was not fond of Martin Luther King at that point. They were really fighting in many ways. But that's an important understanding that, well, we can find some shared place where there are roles for each of us. We have to question those roles. Maybe we're even arguing. But the collaboration ultimately told a very important story.
Well, you know, the state attorney general is going to be featured in a forum at the law school tomorrow. And university president has, I think, said she's joined 5 lawsuits as well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how these play out. But you said you're an optimist.
I am an optimist. And she came to join 100 and some other universities. So there were certainly critics who thought she should have been bolder and spoken out sooner. But she kept her powder dry, you might say, and then joined. Now, you can, the other side of that is, yeah, but it took Harvard to do it. And there's a wonderful irony in Harvard doing it because, and it's classic for this administration. So they wrote an outrageous letter to Harvard. Just, we're taking over everything. You have to do what we say. And Harvard apparently was thinking of negotiating with them until that letter arrived. That letter was just completely, we're going to take over your university. You don't get to say who teaches, what's taught, who's admitted, you know, the things that are core at university, not just academic freedom, but universities and their identities. So Harvard was sort of in a corner, and they had to say no. And they can afford to say no much more than most universities and certainly most American universities. So then the administration says, oh, that was sent by mistake. That was just a draft. So we have such cruelty and such incompetence mixed, it's very important that you're doing programs like this to raise consciousness, if you will, awareness. And I think it's very important for people to know there are many ways in which they can protest, have their voices heard. And it's not just waiting for the next midterm. And it's got to be a combination. This can't be done by any individual or by just the press or just the universities. And you think about all the institutions that they've gone after. And there are very few that have importance that are left out.
That was Avi Soifer, former dean of the University of Hawaii William S. Richardson School of Law. His area of expertise is constitutional law.
Support for HBR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, Ohana, working to protect and manage Oahu's water resources since 1929 for fresh water now and for future generations. BoardofWaterSupply.com.
On the next Science Friday, artificial food dyes are a target of RFK Jr.'s FDA as part of his Make America Healthy Again movement. But what does the science say about their safety?
There is enough evidence to really support an association between consumption of artificial food dyes and changes in behavior in children.
We'll break it down. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from Osher Lifelong Learning Institute for ages 50 and older, with courses from art and film to history and gardening. Classes begin September 22nd. OLLIUHM.org.
You're tuned to Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we hanaho our interviews on the rule of law. Scores of legal challenges over the many executive orders and budget cuts already approved by Congress are making their way through our legal systems. Hawaii has some 27 ongoing lawsuits against the federal government. And last month we spoke with Senate Judiciary Chair Carl Rhodes on how these federal changes affect Hawaii.
The Supreme Court is the one that gets to decide in the end if they want to take a case and how they're going to decide on it. They're famously not necessarily right, but they're the last appeal, so whatever they say goes. How all these cases turn out, I have no idea. And in some cases, I wouldn't argue that the administration is doing anything illegal necessarily until they've been told by a court that they are. The part that worries me is if the court says, hey, you can't do that, and then they go ahead and do it anyway.
And it is disconcerting when you hear that there may be attorneys that may be pushing back on orders that the judges have issued on rulings. And that's scary because you think checks and balances, right? And you would openly defy a judge on something?
No, that is scary. I mean, that's the difference between a democracy and a dictatorship. If the leader's word is the final say on something and not what the statute says or what the Constitution says, then you're not in a democracy anymore at that point. And the Trump administration has been pushing the envelope to the extent that they can, and that's a lot because the President of the United States has a lot of power. At this point, they've even got a federal judge, a circuit court, appeals court judge that's up for nomination, who has in the past said basically what you just said is they can rule that way if they want to, but we're just going to ignore them. That is dangerous territory if you want to live in a democracy. Now, maybe there are some people who don't want to live in a democracy anymore, but I'm certainly not one of them.
I was thinking the other day, it's almost like I woke up and I'm living in the Twilight Zone because things are just so upended and you don't know what kind of information you can trust out there. Just even today, whether it's someone using AI to manipulate Rubio's voice for the State Department, you know, it's very unnerving because you just don't know what you can count on.
The Twilight Zone analogy is a very apt one. It points back to the uncertainty. There's just so many things that, as somebody, I'm 62, for most of my life, there are things that you could count on. You could count on the news to basically tell the truth. You could count on National Public Radio to do good reporting. You could count on ABC and NBC and those guys to take their job seriously. And now, you know, with Trump having twisted the arms of ABC and CBS to the extent they have, and with the funding for National Public Radio and PBS apparently gone, which of course is something they've wanted to do for years and years, so it should come as no surprise that they are trying to do this. But the fact that they actually succeeded this time, there's a lot of good news sources, reliable news sources that are either compromised or just being put under a lot of pressure.
I just feel this use of AI also is very unnerving. In some areas, it's almost like, yeah, Pandora's box was opened and these spirits are swirling around and you're almost paralyzed, like, yikes.
Well, that's part of the strategy. They want you to be paralyzed. They want you to be afraid. And we have, at the state level at least, we've already, it was one of my bills, in fact, we passed a bill on AI and elections. And it's being challenged in court as a violation of the First Amendment rights to lie. But what we were saying basically is if you have someone like Rubio's voice, if you have somebody who's impersonating somebody and you don't identify that that's not real, then that's a violation. The argument is that it gets rid of, there'll be no way to have satire anymore. Yeah, but you can still have satire. You just can't make people say stuff that they didn't actually say without letting you know that's not really what they said. Once truth becomes that sort of fungible and flexible, we're in a really bad place as a country and as a people. And as you say, how do you know? Somebody who's educated, if you have a liberal arts education, you have a background in a number of different areas, so you can cross-reference what's true and what's not true. But if you don't have that background, if you don't have any way to reference what the truth is, it's really easy to just, well, yeah, Fox News says that, it must be right.
Yeah, and there's stuff circulating out there that appears to be benign. I went to a conference and someone said, oh, there's this video that's circulating about Keanu Reeves, and it's such a heartwarming story about this wonderful stuff he's doing with the kids, and it was great. I sent it to my family, and then guess what?
It's turned not out true. It wasn't true.
It's
oh, that's
AI.
Too bad. I saw some of that, too.
Yeah, it's a little creepy, you know, what's out there.
Certainly, this is not the only country this has ever happened in, and after Representative Case comes in a couple weeks, I do also hope to do some more info briefings comparing what has happened in other countries that have had the erosion of their democratic systems. And I have a master's in Soviet and East European area studies. And one of the jokes that used to go around in the old Soviet Union was that the two big newspapers were Izvestia and Pravda. And Pravda means truth and Izvestia means news. And the joke was, there's no news in the truth and there's no truth in the news. And what it resulted in is nobody believed anything that came out in those papers. They were in a news blackout for decades. And what do you do in that situation? Well, in some ways, our situation is worse because we have plenty of news. You just pick up your cell phone and you can see all this stuff. But how do you know which story to believe?
So if people are out there hungry for some conversation about these very deep issues, just the core values of what a democracy is all about, they can go to these informational hearings.
They can come. It'll be streamed online too, of course. But yes, you're welcome to come. It's in the basement of the Capitol, 016, which is the usual Judiciary Committee hearing room.
And more to come?
More to come.
Senator Rhodes, thank you so much for carving out some time from us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Senate Judiciary Chair Carl Rhodes. His interview originally aired July 21st. The first informational briefing featuring U.S. Representative Ed Case was postponed due to illness. Senator Rhodes is continuing to hold information briefings about the rule of law during these very challenging times. Here's State Attorney General Ann Lopez, who gave this update on the ongoing lawsuits in last Thursday's briefing.
The administration is sort of plowing over the idea that we have three co-equal branches of government, and we're seeing that both with their express willingness to not follow the orders of the court, to make statements that the court doesn't actually have the authority to tell the executive branch what to do, and unfortunately with a Congress that is unwilling to fight to maintain its part of that balance.
According to the senator's office, U.S. Representative Ed Case's briefing is being rescheduled for this fall. How are you feeling about the current rule of law? Leave your comments on our talkback line, 808-792-8217. Former Governor David Ige and former Senator and Chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, Randy Iwase, are deeply concerned about the rule of law. The two teamed up with former State Attorney General David Lui and Honolulu Insurance Executive Robin Campagnano to write an op-ed piece that ran in the Honolulu Star Advertiser back in July. Iwase and Ige dropped by our studio last month to talk about what spurred them to collaborate on the article. Governor Ige starts us off.
It's because of the times that we're in. I mean, I think everybody assumes that the rule of law applies and that no one is above the law. And, you know, we've come to expect certain social norms about how law enforcement works, how government works. You know, there is this presumed innocent, right, unless proven. But this administration is just very different in how they're behaving and how they're treating the law.
But you felt it important to speak up.
Yes. First of all, the law applies to everyone, and everyone needs to obey the law. But this administration is behaving very differently because they do believe that they're above the law. And many, many norms that we come to expect living in America is really being ignored. You know, the things that we would expect our government to do, they're not doing anymore. And I think it was just important to let people know that there is a premise that our country was founded on, and in many instances, it's being ignored.
And Randy, do you remember the day? Was there a particular news story that just, I don't know, woke you up to say, hey, someone has to say something?
No, it slowly came up onto me. I've watched this administration, to follow up what the governor is saying. It's just a repetition of egregious acts and conduct by this administration. The Star Advertiser put out an editorial. It's called Reform Gratuitous ICE Crackdowns. You watch this group who act in a manner that is unfamiliar to us. Police officers cannot conduct themselves that way. You cannot go to a house with mask on and not identify yourself. You cannot pull them out of the house. We had that happen on, I believe, the Big Island. There were Filipino teachers who were here, put them outside, and not let them tell you or prove to you that they are American citizens. That's the immigration stuff. There are other birthright citizenship. I'm 78 years old. I've never questioned that. This administration does. The ACLU put out a document from January to April, 100 days of Donald Trump, and listed all of the conduct, like birthright, like DEI, like attacking the universities and the schools to force them to do some kind of compliance with their vision of what education is, dismantling the Department of Education. These things are very, very concerning to me. And it's not just philosophical or partisan differences. It's a fundamental understanding of what this Constitution and Declaration of Independence are about and living by it.
You have a background in law, and you also serve on the Civil Rights Commission?
No, the governor and myself, Dave Louie, who is another co-author, we had a fourth co-author, Robin Campagnano, from the business community. We're members of the Hawaii Coalition on Civil Rights, and I joined that. In fact, let me drop back. What really started me off was when they erased the history of the 442 and the 100 Battalion. I called Bill that day, and I said, brother, we got to do something. This cannot happen. You know, yes, it was personal to me, much more personal to the governor, whose
Absolutely.
Father was in the 100 Battalion, and I believe was injured.
Absolutely. To think that they could ignore the history and the legacy of the most decorated Army unit. We're at the 250th anniversary of the Army, U.S. Army. And to think that they would wipe out any mention of the 442nd, 100th was just appalling. And really, what was the purpose to it? I don't think anybody was standing up saying, hey, look at this, but clearly recognizing the heroism. I truly believe it was the greatest generation in our country's history because they stood up and they knew what evil was and they were committed to risk their lives to protect freedom and democracy. And by lark, they decide to erase the mention. I mean, it was restored, but it does show you to what extent this administration is going to change the country to their perception of what should be.
You know, it's interesting because of the attack that we're seeing on DEI and immigration here in Hawaii with our history of immigrants. You know, this community was built welcoming immigrants. And I don't know, Randy, has there been anything recently that you were struck by?
Well, not in the immediate past, but about a month or two ago, my wife, who is a school principal, retired, very close to education. There is a teacher in Idaho. In her classroom, she put up a sign with drawings of hands of various colors. And it says, we welcome everybody. Well, she was told, because of the DEI position of the administration, she was told by a principal to take it down. She did. The following day, she did. And then she put it back up. And she quit. And I thought to myself, gee, that's a sign. It doesn't say one race or that race. It's welcome all races. That's Hawaii. That's what we grew up in. Now, for Hawaii, this executive order that went out that says you speak English. Well, in our constitution, Hawaiian is a second language. How do we deal with that?
Language, yeah.
And it's every day they do something, not for everyone, of course. He has his supporters. But you got to look deep about why we started this country, what we revolted against. And it's the liberties and freedoms that are being taken away, the divisiveness that is being created intentionally, I think. The more it's divided, the more for them. That's what generated this paper, this op-ed, and the Gov, Dave Louie, Robin Campagnano, all of us from Hawaii. You don't have to be from Hawaii to have a differing view from the Trump administration, but all of us understood how dark times we are living in right now. It is serious. And people got to wake up, speak up, and stand up.
What is it that troubles you, Governor?
You know, I did work with the Trump administration in Trump 1, and it was clear to me at that point there were enough people in the administration that tried to do what was legal, what was within the law. And when the president said something that I thought was against the law, there was somebody. We called the chief of staff to talk about, did he really mean that? You know, we were talking about disaster situations and emergency aid. And he goes, you know, I don't know why I should be helping. a democratic state. They never helped me. And obviously, we had several emergencies and we had presidential proclamations issued. So I called chief of staff to say, did he really mean that? I mean, did he really mean that they're not going to? And they said, no, he can't do that. So don't worry, your funding is okay. This administration is different because every single one in his cabinet and all of the leadership in government now will do what he says, period, regardless of what they believe the law says. And they're willing to fight it out in court. And sometimes it's too late. The legal process can take months, years for that to be reconciled. And in the meantime, the people of this country, the people of Hawaii, will be suffering. And it seems like the court has yielded and been willing to give the president the benefit of the doubt. Even as Randy said, for something as simple and clear in the Constitution of birthright citizenship, I don't know how anyone could have an alternative reading of what the Constitution plainly says. Anyone born in America is a U.S. citizen, period. There's no ambiguity. The fact that this lawsuit went through appeals courts up to the Supreme Court and back, and they are looking at technicalities rather than the basic question. The basic question is, what does the Constitution say and what does it mean? And it seems to be pretty clear to me, but the Trump administration says something different. And the courts at this point has been willing to say, okay, maybe we need to revisit. And that really does affect all of us. Many in Hawaii trace themselves back to an immigrant. And, you know, we have always said, especially with the experience of Japanese American during the war, that an assault on one is an assault against all. And definitely, I think everyone needs to care about immigration. I think many of us know. And we need to be concerned because this administration is willing to do whatever action they want to do and fight it out in court, regardless of whether it's legal or not.
We'll have more of our conversation with former Governor David Ige and former Senator Randy Iwase after a break.
On the next Radiolab.
A weird little forest where photons go to die.
We follow a mystery into a space.
I mean, it's as dark as anywhere you can get on the planet.
Where creatures shapeshift.
You really feel like you're looking through them into an abyss.
Things behave strangely.
And it's like, good Lord, I mean, that's just nuts.
And darkness rules.
Yeah, you feel like it's asking you something.
That's on the next Radiolab.
Beginning Saturday morning at 11.
Support for HPR comes from Kumukahua Theater, presenting Smother. To avoid losing her daughter entirely, Marcia, fiercely devoted but meddlesome, learns to let go. Opens August 28th, kumukahua.org.
Let's get back to a conversation we had recently with two former lawmakers. Governor David Ige and Senator Randy Iwase felt compelled to put pen to paper and write down what they had been feeling and thinking about the headlines of late. The former lawmakers highlight the importance of community discussions about the rule of law in our country. Here's Iwase.
I share the governor's concern about the Supreme Court. We have three branches of government. And in the past, the court has not necessarily lived up to the concepts of freedom, liberty, the Dred Scott decision that said slaves are property. And it took over 100 years to say, no, you cannot have separate but equal schools. All students must go to this, be educated in the same way. What is troubling to me, following up on what the governor said, is when the appeals go to the Supreme Court, and it's not easy to get there, but they get there, emergency appeals or whatever, the courts would say, are saying, and they did in the birthright citizenship case, and even more egregious, they did something, but it was the judges at the lower levels are all saying, this is ridiculous. Whether it's birthright citizenship, giving access to personal files of Americans, firing without cause thousands of people, thousands, hundreds of thousands. Okay, so they say no, the lower court judges, the appellate court judges, goes up to the Supreme Court. They say, okay, we'll take an emergency appeal. We're going to enjoin enforcement of that order. So like birthright citizenship, what's the status of that? Our records, our personal records, Social Security, data, what's going to happen to that? Because they say your court cannot issue a nationwide injunction, you being in the lower court. So we're going to enjoin, pause that order. And so it's status quo. The status quo is the executive orders issued by this president, which are egregious, which are terrifying, which are bullying people. And then they sit on it. Birthright citizenship has not been decided by this U.S. Supreme Court. Now, the Ninth Circuit, I believe, yesterday said in a 2-1 decision, birthright citizenship is a right, is citizenship. You are not going to take it away. We're going to enjoin the application across the nation because it makes it difficult to have this hodgepodge of where, who sues, do you have the money? So that's the Ninth Circuit's latest decision. What is the Supreme Court going to do? Are they going to say, we're going to pontificate? Not pontificate. We're going to sit in a sterile room with windows, look out at the beautiful picture, and debate this. You don't debate birthright citizenship. You don't debate whether you can have rights to my Social Security records. You don't debate that. You don't debate why did you arrest a Minnesota state judge. You don't debate that. You take the case. They didn't do it in birthright citizenship. And that concerns me because, as the governor rightly points out, the legal process can take time. But if the Supreme Court continues to say the status quo is the executive order of the president and we will decide the merits later, it is too late. It is too late.
Anything else that troubles you, Governor?
I do think, and it's really making people aware. You know, sometimes we're in Hawaii and we don't see the impacts. And, you know, Randy talked about the teachers, the Filipino teachers on Maui. And sometimes we think, oh, you know, what we read about or see on social media is not happening in Hawaii. But it really is. And I think everyone needs to understand that the government is different now. And they are willing to sacrifice the rights and privileges that we've all assumed growing up in America. I mean, citizenship is the basic foundation. And now just imagine every single child born after that executive order, their citizenship status is questioned. And so what happens? You know, if you just think back to what that means and how that could impact. I mean, as Randy said, it's in every single area the court has yielded to the executive that you can go ahead and do whatever it is that you think is okay. And we'll think about whether we want to get involved or intervene.
Yeah, we'll decide later.
Yeah, we'll decide later. And public radio funding, and now it's a little different, I guess. The Congress actually cut the funds out of the federal budget. But I do know international students at the university had visas put on hold. There are grants, research grants. The Cancer Center in Hawaii has several grants that have been put on hold. Even though the impacts might not be as visible, they are happening and they will grow and grow and grow because this administration doesn't care what the law says. They believe they're above the law. They believe that their vision of what America should be is their vision. And they are forcing their vision on every single citizen here in Hawaii and America, especially those who are outside the norm.
Well, I have to ask because one of the conversations we had here on our show had to do with the error rate on the overpayments for the SNAP program. And the federal government fined us, I think it was $11 million, because our rate was just through the roof. And we've been able to get that down to just a little over 6. But when the president talks about waste and abuse and fraud, you know, there are listeners out there who believe that the government has lost its way and is just giving away too much money and not minding the bank. So what do you say to those concerns?
You know, it just galls me because they continue to spew these falsehoods. I mean, yes, there are errors, but it's a small percentage of the money that is handed out through SNAP, for example. We are pretty diligent in verifying eligibility and making sure that those eligible are the ones receiving. Today, it is easy to put together fraudulent identifications and other things that could make you seem eligible when you're not. But as I said, that is a very small percentage of the resources that goes to these people who would starve otherwise. I mean, that's, we are looking at those most needy in our community and supporting them in basic life essentials. And yes, there are errors occasionally, but the amount of errors is very, very small compared to the need and the demand.
Anything else that you want to end with, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, following up what the governor said, you know, there's an old saying, a broken clock is right twice a day. Okay. Yes, there's fraud. Yes, the borders were loose. Yes, we have to get rid of illegal criminal elements that the Trump administration was talking about. No one disagrees with that. That's being right on the clock, the broken clock. But it's the execution. And so to deal with immigration, you break into, you go to a house, houses of 7 Filipino teachers and their families on Maui, and you pull them outside. You send out a quota of immigrants who have to be, to have to be deported. When was the last time, and they would have done it with their PR machine, when was the last time you heard of a rapist, a murderer, a heavy drug dealer in America, illegal immigrant being deported? You've heard of pregnant women. You've heard of children. Okay, let's talk about education. Yeah, maybe the money is not going the way it should go, but do you dismantle, despite Congress setting it up? So that's, even the dismantling is questionable. Do you dismantle the Department of Education? If there's so-called waste in employees in the government, why are you firing over 100,000? Over 100,000. Where's your justification for that? He's going after the Fed chair. Now he's backing off. That's a second clock being right in a day. Maybe he's coming to a conclusion, I can't do that, finally. But until he stopped, until this administration is stopped, until his acolytes stop, this country is going downhill. We are ignoring the Constitution. We are ignoring the spirit of the Declaration of Independence. And being right twice a day on a 24-hour day, that's not good enough.
Senator Wase, Governor Ige, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with our community. And thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Senator Randy Iwase and Governor David Ige, who stopped by our studio last month to talk about the rule of law and why people should care about how the legal challenges play out at our nation's highest court. Their article ran in the Honolulu Star Advertiser back in July. That does it for today's Rule of Law Hanaho Show. Have thoughts about the current state of rule of law? Share your comments on our talkback line, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you missed any part of the show or want to listen back to a past one, find them all on the conversation page of our website with links to more information about guests and topics. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Savannah Harriman Pope and the digital team. Our intern is Laura Dukes. Our backyard quiz theme, written for us by John DeMello, theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.